Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Jack Kelly, author of the new nonfiction book, God Save Benedict Arnold, The True Story of America's Most Hated Man. John Ferling, author of Winning Independence, wrote about the book, insightful, well-crafted, and engaging. Kelly provides a provocative look at what made Arnold tick. I recommend this book for those who wish to understand the war and to know Benedict Arnold. Jack, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's great to talk to you.
I know that a lot of people listening may know the name Benedict Arnold, and they may automatically think famous traitor. Before we get into discussing Arnold and his true story, can you just give a quick refresher of exactly who Benedict Arnold was? And can you tell us the main reason that most people remember him as a traitor?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that most people remember only one thing about Benedict Arnold, which is that he committed treason. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to get across the idea that there was a lot more to Benedict Arnold than that one thing, and that his career in the war was very important. And it was one of the things that really surprised me. And I'd done work with Benedict Arnold before and written about him, but one of the things that surprised me as I dug into the research was how really important he was. His achievements were absolutely crucial during the first 3 years of the war. At that point, for reasons that are still debated, hotly debated, I would say, he decided to go over to the British, and he tried to allow the British to take over the fort at West Point, which was guarding the Hudson River, and that plot, fortunately, was foiled, but he went and served with the British and became a general in the British Army at the very end of the war. And then after the war was over, he fled to England.
Did he live in England the rest of his life?
He spent a few years in Canada. He and his wife came over to Canada. He tried to get into business up there. And then he returned to England. And his goal after his committing treason was to get into the British Army and stay there. And the officers in the British Army, because he was a traitor, even though he'd come over to their side, they didn't want him in their ranks. And he never got a real assignment in the British Army. So he became a businessman, which he had been before the Revolutionary War, and was fairly successful. And he not a particularly happy person, but he lived out his life there. He died what we would now say fairly young, at the age of 61, gotcha. 60, I think it was, in 1801.
As I mentioned, the subtitle of your book is The True Story of Benedict Arnold, and you just alluded to it, but I realize that you wrote an entire book which listeners should go and read, but what was the true story about Arnold that most people don't know? I mean, you alluded to it earlier in terms of his accomplishments in the first 3 years of the war. Can you just kind of tell us about that?
Yeah, his really each year he had a major achievement. And he started in 1775. He was very enthusiastic about the cause. In fact, much more enthusiastic than many of the patriots and of Congress itself. As soon as the war started, he was living as a businessman in New Haven. He was not had no military background, but he plunged into the war. And 3 weeks after the fighting at Lexington and Concord, he captured Fort Ticonderoga, which is a fort up on Lake Champlain that guarded the waterway that came down from Canada, and that he felt was crucial, and it was absolutely crucial to the during the early years of the war, that the Patriots control that. And he also gained control of the entire Lake Champlain by capturing a warship up there. That prevented the British from invading down that water corridor that ran from Montreal down Lake Champlain, down Lake George, down the Hudson River, all the way to New York City. That was kind of the superhighway of that time. There were virtually no roads. What roads there were very bad. So to move an army, you really had to move it on water, and that was the main invasion route from Canada. And because of the Patriot control of Ticonderoga for the first couple of years, the British were thwarted from launching that invasion. So that really saved the Patriot cause in 1775. Then you jump ahead to 1776, and the British made their attempt to come down. They built a fleet of warships up in Canada. They sailed down Lake Champlain. Benedict Arnold supervised the defense of Ticonderoga on the water on Lake Champlain. He had been a sea captain before the war, so he was very familiar with nautical aspects of war. And he built a small fleet, mostly gunboats and small sailing vessels, took them up to the north end of Lake Champlain, fought a very fierce battle with the British in October of 1776. Didn't win that battle, but he delayed the British enough so that they decided to give up their invasion for that year. This was getting too late in the season. They decided to go back to Canada and wait and try it again the next year. And the reason that was important was that George Washington in 1776 was trying to defend New York, which was the other end of that water corridor. And he lost the Battle of Brooklyn, which was the largest single battle of the entire war. He was driven out of New York City. He eventually retreated into New Jersey. He was pushed across the entire state of New Jersey and ended up in Pennsylvania. And his 20,000-man army that he'd started with had shrunk down to 3,000 men. And Washington wrote to his brother at that time. He said, I'm afraid the game is nearly up. He really was in despair that they were going to be able to win the war. And if he'd had to worry about an invasion coming down the Hudson River, I think he would have been, the war would have been over. But instead, Arnold was able to bring troops down from Fort Ticonderoga to join Washington's army in Pennsylvania and participate in the great attack on Christmas night, in which Washington famously crossed the Delaware and attacked the Hessians at Trenton and really revived the Patriot spirits and morale and set the British back. So that was the great achievement of 1776. Benedict Arnold didn't fight at the Battle of Trenton. He'd been sent off on another assignment at that time. But his men were there and participated. And then finally in 1777, the British finally did mount their invasion, did come down Lake Champlain, 7,000-man army, took Fort Ticonderoga, and Benedict Arnold was sent up there to help stop them. This was going to be a major disaster for the Patriots. George Washington, again, was now down in Philadelphia fighting and losing the battle and eventually lost the city of Philadelphia. So it was crucial that they stop the invasion from the north. And the Benedict Arnold and General Horatio Gates, who was his commander, decided to meet Burgoyne at the high ground along the Hudson River, a few miles south of the village of Saratoga. And they fought two battles there in the fall of 1777. In both battles, Burgoyne tried to come around the left end of the American lines. In both battles, Benedict Arnold was in command of the left division. In the first battle, he was able to stop Burgoyne cold. And in the second battle, he decisively defeated him, then led a charge into the British field fortifications, broke through, and put Burgoyne in a position where he had to do what he said he would never do, which was to retreat. And Benedict Arnold was severely wounded in that battle, but Burgoyne, 10 days later, had to surrender his entire army. And that was an absolutely crucial battle. It's referred to as the turning point of the Revolutionary War. Time magazine actually judged that the Battle of Saratoga was the single most important battle fought anywhere in the world in the last 1,000 years. So it was an important achievement. And Benedict Arnold was largely responsible for the victory. Gates certainly helped strategically, but Benedict Arnold did the fighting and defeated Burgoyne's army. So at that point, this is in 1777, Arnold's career as an American soldier was almost over. He was laid up for many months. A bullet had shattered his leg bone, and he, during that time of brooding and inaction, he started thinking and decided to go over to the British, and that plot came to fruition a couple of years later.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And in your research, what did you find? I mean, you talk about him being severely wounded and being kind of convalescing for months at a time. What did he ever talk about? What his state of mind and what made him go over to the British after all of this fighting and leading that he did?
Yeah, the question of why he changed sides, why someone who was so heroic, risked his life so many times, seemed so devoted to the Patriot cause, would then change sides, is a question that's really vexed historians ever since. And many historians have their own pet theories about why he did it. Some say it was for the money. The British did pay him a substantial amount of money for betraying West Point. Some say it was his wife. He'd married a young, loyalist-leaning young lady, Peggy Shippen from Philadelphia, and she was involved in the plot, but whether she was responsible for convincing him to get involved himself is really an unknown. Some said he was disgruntled with Congress. He put out a letter describing a number of reasons, one of which was that he didn't like the French alliance. He had grown up hating the French, and he didn't think that was the proper strategy for the Patriots. But the reasons he gave were really more excuses than any kind of convincing fundamental reasons that would explain his treason. And I really came to the conclusion that the real answer to that question is, I don't know. You know,
something that
there seems to be no real reason to that. Yeah, there seems to be no real reason that could have the weight
him
to do what he did. And in the book, I talk about a number of factors that I think are purely speculation. And I think one of them is, you know, he experienced a lot of trauma during the war. Today we're much more aware of the effect of trauma on people, and particularly to be in the kind of pain that, you know, is unrelieved pain for many, many months. And all the things he saw and all the hardships he went through, that it could have affected him in ways that we really will never understand, but might have been a factor. But that's pure speculation.
How did you approach your research for this book to kind of rethink and recast the traditional narrative about Arnold?
Well, it was partly, I'd written quite a bit about Arnold in my previous books about the Revolutionary War, and particularly I wrote a book called Valcour, which was focused on that campaign in 1776 and was really the impetus to go on and try to sum up Arnold's career for me. And there's a limited amount of material that really explains Benedict Arnold, because he was not an intellectual. He was not somebody that wrote a lot or that kept a diary or that even wrote that many letters. There are a few letters and orders that he wrote, but he was a man of action. And I think that's one thing that some historians have kind of missed about Arnold, that they're always looking for the clues in the written record of who he was, and he just didn't leave behind very many clues. He was not an introspective person. He didn't sit and think about why he was thinking something. He didn't. He never doubted himself. He never thought he committed treason. I mean, he thought that he had done the right thing when he joined the cause, and he did the right thing when he, as he said, I tried to shorten the war. I thought the war was no longer productive, and it was the easiest way to do that was to help the British win the war. So he was always thought that he was in the right, not an uncommon feeling, but that was the from those facts we have to draw, you know, create a picture, and that's the book that I wrote is my picture, and really telling the story, because I started out my writing career as a novelist, so I always try to tell a great story, and I think the story of Benedict Arnold really is fascinating, even if we don't totally understand a person who was pretty opaque in his personality.
Are you researching or already writing your next book?
I'm researching and doing a little bit of writing. I'm going to be addressing another very controversial figure in the Revolutionary era, which is Thomas Paine, and not so much a factor in the war, though, as a lot of people don't realize that he did serve with the Continental Army. In fact, he was with Washington as Washington was being driven across New Jersey before the crossing of the Delaware. So he had his taste of war. He was really wrote two of the most important documents of that era, and then his reputation kind of faded in later years for a lot of reasons. And I'm trying to kind of focus on his contribution to the revolution, which I think is enormous, and I think he's really one of our very influential founders.
Well, you alluded to, or you mentioned earlier, you started out as a novelist and you wrote several crime novels. Can you tell us what kind of prompted the switch from novels to nonfiction history books?
Well, it wasn't for me. It wasn't that big of a leap for two reasons. One is I was always interested in whether it was crime, writing about crime or writing about war, in the experience of human extremes, the extremes of people's experience, and how how do you feel? What are you thinking when you walk into a bank with a submachine gun under your coat, with the intention of robbing it? What do you think when you're going into battle and you could easily be killed? So I was interested in that aspect of people's psychology, and also most of my crime novels were set in the past. I had some in the 50s. I wrote about John Dillinger back in the 30s. And so I did a lot of research, and I liked the historical research as well as the writing. So I eventually got interested in the Revolutionary War in particular, but I've written about the Erie Canal and some of the labor disputes of the 1890s. I guess I'd have to say I fell in love with history and wanted to know more and more about it.
What writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels, or in your case, nonfiction books?
Well, I think my the key to my own career has been persistence. You know, if every writer has their ups and downs, and every writer every day has to face getting up and sitting down and writing, and that's really the crucial aspect of it. Is if you give up, you're not going to succeed. If you don't give up, you may succeed. And if you just take that attitude, and it takes a long time. And I've been writing for quite a number of years, and it does get easier after a while. It does come easier, but it's a lot of work to do that. And what that work consists of is mainly just writing, rewriting, critically looking at your own work, and then rewriting again. I usually write about six drafts of almost anything I write. I do about six drafts. So, and that's the part of the job that I prefer. I like to rewrite. The actual writing is a little bit harder, but I don't know, just keep writing.
What nonfiction books or novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Let's see. I'm actually writing, I'm reading a history of the, this is away from my own research. I read a lot about the Revolutionary era. But in addition to that, I was reading a book called The Peace to End All Peace that was a history of the decline of the Ottoman Empire. And really fascinating, very well written, and it was a book that has quite a bit of relevance to things that are going on in the Middle East today, looking back particularly at the World War I era and how the Ottoman Empire fell apart and the European powers went into Europe, into the Middle East. So that's one thing. I recently reread a book by Muriel Spark called Memento Mori that was sort of a comedy, a dark comedy about old age. I think you would describe it as a great book. There's so many books, you know, that were not classics, not considered classics. You didn't run into them reading in high school, but that are, you know, authors that are that were so precise in their writing and so skilled and so insightful. Penelope Fitzgerald comes to mind as probably a lesser known but very important and very very insightful writer.
Where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your books?
I have a website that's usually the best place to get in touch with me. There's a contact page on it. It's The title is jackkellybooks.com, so it's fairly easy to remember. And I actually started a Substack newsletter that I do once a week that's like a little history essay that also I, you know, keep people up to date on things that I'm doing, but I try to give them a little bit of offbeat history, which you can sign up for free on the website. So those are two best places.
Again, we've been speaking with Jack Kelly, author of the new book, God Save Benedict Arnold, The True Story of America's Most Hated Man. The book is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Jack, thanks for doing this interview.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
Absolutely.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.